had an aged care employee day saying thank you and thanks for caring was the theme. And our Shoalhaven and Yirrabadalla teams who went through the bushfires, obviously like the South, you guys have been under the pump there for quite a while. They won an excellence award for those efforts during the fire. So looking after the residents and customers, because we had a number of our sites were under direct fire threat during the summer bushfires. So they've been recognised for that effort. And look, everybody, when they think of aged care, they think it's sort of just the aged care workers and nurses, but there's also, you know, our lifestyle coordinators, our kitchen, laundry, cleaning staff, our caterers, maintenance and gardeners, retirement village managers, people working in home care, and also to admin. People always forget the poor admin team, who worked really hard over that period. So keeping people safe and working, you know, non-stop for quite a few days there as we all felt the impact of those fires.
Oh, look, it was really scary, and it didn't just come and go. It was with us for weeks. And so your workers must have been under a lot of stress. So how did they actually get through?
Yeah, look, teamwork, really, and that's what they won the award for. But, look, I'm really proud and I'm really humble that these people, you know, the heroism that they showed, they kept really calm under pressure, which I think when you work in healthcare particularly, you're normally not too bad under pressure. But it wasn't just them. It was the family members that gathered around, the next of kin of the residents and customers, also too the relatives of our staff who came in and helped move things around or do things at the time, even when their own homes were under threat. So, you know, that's probably the most amazing thing. There was leadership, there was courage, there was selflessness. There were, you know, all sorts of heroic tales that came out of that, as you know, across the entire coast, not just aged care. But that's probably the main thing. You know, they pulled together when they needed it and really backed each other up, which is fantastic.
Did you need to move any of your residents out of the area?
Yeah, we did. So at the Dalmeni care site, you know, that big fire front that was in the rear of Narooma and Dalmeni there, we did move them towards the coast at Estia. They took some of our people and the rest we took up to Maruya, which, you know, surprisingly, you know, through that fire period, Maruya was probably more under threat than Dalmeni at some points there. So they're all safe. We called it the Ark. We had people who obviously lived there with us. We had people from our Dalmeni centre, but we also had a lot of people from the community who had nowhere to go, came up to us. So at one point there, we normally have between, you know, sort of 35 and 40 residents at Maruya. We had over 70 during the peak of the fire, plus, you know, staff and next of kin and staff's relatives helping. So it was a bit of a party atmosphere is what I've been told and what I've heard from relatives in the area. So, look, they did a great job, and really it was all to them. It's all credit to that team. Up and down the coast, they worked so hard.
Yes, and, you know, like you said, while under intense personal pressure and, you know, with homes being burnt, no doubt, and just the uncertainty of it, and there was that thick smoke. So, you know, I recall just being in a shop at some point and someone rushing in. She just had to put all her gear in a car. They had to evacuate from one of the villages, and then she was required to front up and teach young kids. And she was just commenting on the crazy, you know, the crazy nature of the situation. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, that people were literally leaving homes that had the flames at the back door to go and work and look after people or, as you said, go and teach or go and do whatever their day job was. The other thing too, I think, for me was the community spirit that came from that, from sort of South Nowra, where we were under fire threat, all the way through to the far south coast. What we saw too was people like Woolworths and IGA, the local Caltex, you name the people, they opened their doors for us after hours often to help us get milk or bread or food. Our catering trucks were trying to get through with police escorts, et cetera, et cetera. In the interim, all these businesses just said, look, you're in aged care, you've got vulnerable people, come on in, take what you need, don't worry, don't pay us. You know, it was just amazing, just the support. So, you know, nothing else, it just reaffirms your belief in human nature.
Absolutely. And so we've gone from one crisis to the next and we've heard some pretty curly tales, some pretty worrying things coming out of the Aged Care Royal Commission. And, of course, we've seen in Victoria a terribly, a dire, tragic situation. And New South Wales has had its issues too. How prepared are the facilities now for an outbreak of COVID?
Yeah, so we've been preparing since late January, early February, when we started seeing what was happening, particularly in Europe, but certainly in Asia as well, and then the US and Canada. For us, it's all about an outbreak management plan. So what happens when COVID does impact? We closed our centres early. I took that decision probably earlier than most and copped a bit of heat for that. But I think, in retrospect, it was the right thing to do. Look, I feel desperately for our residents and the next of kin with the limited access that they do have to each other, particularly, you know, some of our more frail residents, is trying to make sure that people can get in and see their loved ones in a safe way. Our outbreak management plan, we're about to release the latest version. We thought it's probably a good idea, given some of those things coming out of the Royal Commission, that people can see our preparations. We think we're pretty well prepared, but you never know. No plan survives its first contact with the enemy, and our enemy, unfortunately, is an invisible virus that is showing itself to be pretty stealthy. So, look, we're working really hard. The staff have done a fantastic job so far. We've done a lot of scenario testing too, so going out to sites and putting them through their paces to make sure that they can, be effective from hour one on day one if we did have an outbreak. So All these things are happening. I think we're learning on the fly too, so we're trying to move. It's a living plan, we're moving through that now.
And so how are you going to staff people? I know, for example, there are aged care workers who are in self-isolation at the moment at the Bay.
Yeah.
Has that affected your homes, and how are you compensating? We heard that there was meant to be some surge workforce, but we've heard that there are all sorts of issues with that and it's not necessarily happening. How are we dealing with that?
Yeah, so our clinical leadership, we look at where the outbreaks are, and obviously Tungara, which then affected the Bay, and Huskisson, so we have sites around there as well. We exclude staff if they've had a close contact. They need to go and get tested, etc. We do have plans in place, so we're currently staffing at what we would call an outbreak level anyway. So from year to year, we have outbreaks of influenza or gastro, those sorts of things. We're used to this sort of thing in terms of the staffing required. The big concern is if you do have an outbreak and most of your team gets taken out. So we're working on our plans around that, and that's part of our outbreak management plan, is to make sure we do have staffing or workforce considered. And to be honest, from the fires, what we learn is we're told all these structures like the surge workforce will be available, or those sorts of fallbacks. What we've decided is don't rely on them. Let's try and be as self-sufficient as we can, or work with our other providers. So one of the things we are doing, talking to the local health district, the LHD, south and here in the Illawarra, and also too looking at other sources of workforce, etc. But trying to make sure that we're working as a team, the wider health community, to make sure that we're prepared, because there's issues around transfers to hospital. How do we control transmission or limit transmission inside the homes, all those sorts of things. So we're doing a lot of work.
Yeah, and that's what we've seen with that Newmarch, and that was going to be my final question, is what is the upshot with that situation, in that if you do get an outbreak, transporting or getting people to hospital, is that how it's going to work?
Yeah, well, look, my view as the provider is that anybody who's infected should be transferred. The problem we have, of course, is that the health system doesn't necessarily believe that's the best method. I think what we've seen in South Australia, what we are now seeing in Victoria, and what we saw from Newmarch, is that if somebody is infected, don't keep them in place, don't keep them in situ. Do move them to care, or out of care, into hospital as quickly as possible. That's my preferred. Now, I have to work with the public health unit and with the local hospitals. We'll do whatever we can to move that through. But our plan is around, if people need medical care, they should get it. And I think we're now seeing a shift from the health system to acknowledge that, and that's pleasing, but we're still working very hard on our plan to make sure that people are safe and secure as best we can make them if we do have an outbreak. But my view should be that people, if they are unwell, should be moved to hospital. We're a home, we're not a hospital, and they have a lot more facilities than we do. So, look, I think that's still a debate, and it's one that we have to have, but I would certainly think that the mood is shifting on trying to keep people in place if they are infected.